It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, it. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
Exterminate!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skippy and Fanny Show, episode 5.5.
Riding the apocalypse on a pickle-shaped surfboard, because we're all screwed anyway.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Jen.
And of course, it's Torture Cinema Week.
Yes, it is.
Thanks, guys.
Are you ready to be tortured?
2012, the very special apocalypse movie with
yes,
John Cusack and Amanda Peet and that guy from Serenity.
What guy from Serenity?
The Dr. Adrian, whatever. You know, that guy who's in Serenity, played the evil bad guy.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
The main black guy.
He played the bad guy in Serenity?
Yeah, he was
he
the assassin.
Did!
Yes!
He's really good, too.
I know, I've forgotten his name. But anyway.
It's like Chiletti or something. It's some foreign name.
Okay, so that's what we're watching. Or
yes.
Did watch. And then we're going to talk about it, as usual. So should we just go into a rambly description of the movie?
Yes. What is the movie about?
2012 Comes True.
Woohoo! That is like the most succinct description that you've ever been able to give about a film.
Yeah. Well, okay, so like the more serious description would probably be something like this, which is that 2012 Comes True, and in the process we follow a bunch of really awful human beings as they try to survive the apocalypse. And of course the apocalypse is completely absurd, in which like the land lifts up and like flings around and shit, and it's just stupid. And there's lots of really cool, like, airplanes flying around building stuff. And that's essentially the movie of them trying not to die while...
Yeah, you should have just stuck with the 2012 happens.
Oh, okay. But this lesson.
I'm not even sure where the airplanes building things comes in.
That's what half the movie is them flying away from stuff.
But there's no airplanes building things.
No, airplanes flying between buildings.
Oh, flying between buildings. Gotcha. Okay. I'm sorry. I missed
you. Pay attention to what I say. Jeez.
I did, but it sounded more like you said building things, and that didn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
Okay. So anyway, so this movie is special.
It is special.
And we'll get into some of the reasons why it is special in our likes and dislikes. So we should start with likes, I think, because my dislikes are a little bit more windy.
All right.
So
I will go with my first like.
Okay.
It's actually the only decent like, I think, that I have.
Oh, I think you're going to say the same thing I was going to say. What are you going to say?
The only thing that I actually like is that a science fiction author is an inspirational character.
Oh, I didn't even realize he was a science fiction author.
How did you miss that?
I didn't
it's like
think...
a oh. key point.
Well, whatever.
Like, the main scientist guy, like, you know, when they meet, that's, like, they first meet, he's like, are you so-and-so? And he's like, well, yes, I am. And he wrote an optimistic portrayal of humankind after, in a, like, you know, apocalyptic situation.
Oh, well,
that people would band together and help each other.
Well, I totally missed that undertext.
That's sad. I mean, it's like really the only good thing about the film. Not about the film necessarily, but about the plot.
Okay, well, I'll agree, because the visuals would be my first like. Is that for a 2009 film, the visuals are pretty cool.
Yeah, the visuals are pretty cool. There's only a couple of points that were utterly absurd. Well, actually, the whole thing is utterly absurd, but they look amazing.
Right,
on
that's what I mean. Like, none of it makes any sense scientifically.
No.
But when stuff blows up and there's like cool stuff for planes, like I mentioned, like flying between buildings that are collapsing and
right.
Yeah,
super spiffy.
I like that. You know, for a movie, you know, a lot of crap gets blown up. It's good.
Well, I mean, that is what Roland Emmerich is good at.
That's true. I almost thought it was Michael Bay, but then I realized there weren't any giant robots. So
no giant robots. just the world ending, and that's what Roland Emmerich does best. And this was, to me, 2012 is Roland Emmerich's joygasm of world destruction. That's essentially the point of the movie.
Can I just admit that Day After Tomorrow is such a better apocalyptic movie? And it's not very good. But compared to this piece of crap, I would rather watch Day After Tomorrow.
Well, yeah. And then you have Day After Tomorrow. Not well, okay, it's pretty horrible. And then you have, obviously, Independence Day, which is, like, vastly superior.
Well, that's because it has aliens.
Mostly.
Okay, so let's go to our first dislike. My first dislike is actually a rather amusing fact that tells me that the people who wrote this film don't know how to use Wikipedia. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. The utopian delusion that Arnold Schwarzenegger will still be governor in 2012, coupled with the really awful fake governor actor, because they didn't even bother to, like, get Arnold on. They just, like, put some guy who, like, did really, like, just really just bad. But the thing is, in California, governors can only serve 2 terms.
Yeah.
And he was 2 years into his second term when this movie was released. So
that is a really good point.
Fundamentally impossible for him to still be governor in 2012.
Well, yeah, they don't really like facts when they were making this film.
I know,
that's
but
really,
like,
what it comes down to
for the realism, like, at least to just make me buy what is already a really stupid premise, you could at least get this one little thing right.
Well, okay, then I'm going to go with my dislike. I didn't put mine in numerical order, so.
Okay.
One of my dislikes actually is related to that, and that's the fact that cell phones still work even after most of the planet has been destroyed.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
not satellite phones, because that might almost make sense. No, just a regular old cell phone seems to work just fine, even though most of the world has been destroyed. Apparently, there's a cell tower or two stuck up in the Himalayas that hadn't been, like, run over yet, and Verizon's doing fine,
they get really good reception.
To make sure the call goes through. Reception is fabulous, regardless of the fact that you probably have a huge amount of electromagnetic radiation going on across the planet.
Well, yeah, because the pole switch in the movie, doesn't the South Pole become Wisconsin?
Yep.
Which totally makes sense, because Wisconsin's the ass end of the country anyway.
Or Wisconsin. So yeah, but really, it's that facts. Just not the strong suit of this film.
And it's, like, simple facts.
Simple.
It's, like, really, like, could they have just, like, shown, like, people running by a cell tower as they were on their phone?
That might have helped at least a little bit, the reality of the situation, but it still was completely absurd. And I'm sure I could actually go through you can go through the film and pick out a lot of stuff. And this, of course, is related to one of my other dislikes, but the simple facts, you know, it's like not even like the big things, just the simple facts that they chose to really ignore.
Right. That those all lead to a film that does not, I mean, because you already have to buy a premise which is retarded.
Exactly.
To begin with, which is that the Mayans were right and the Earth is going to go and, like, everything's going to go crappy.
Right.
Like, that's already absurd.
Yes.
But we can put up with that.
We can put up with, I'm okay with that, as long as you at least try to put a little bit of reality into the situation.
Because that's what this is missing. It's so unrealistic as a film about human reactions. Some of the reactions are realistic, but in terms of, like, how humanity survives it, it's like, no.
Right. Right.
It would not, I'm pretty sure we'd be effed.
Yes.
Basically. But we'll get into that later. So let's go to your second like.
My second like is that it's actually a really fun film.
Fun in most a, like, time. like,
it's fun to watch. I mean, I suppose that you're not actually supposed to be, like, having fun with the film because, like, you know, people are dying and stuff. But really, who cares? It's a fun movie. It's fun to watch shit fall. I live in California, and I enjoy watching the destruction of California.
I know when it's sunk into the ocean, which is ridiculous.
I live on the San Andreas Fault Line. I'm going to be one of the first ones to go if this happens. I mean, this is like...
So it's some sort of, like, sick, twisted, like, it's almost like the Death Drive. Oh, gosh, I shouldn't go into Lacan. Never mind, no academics. But
well, yeah, well, let's go with the Tea Partiers clapping for executions. You know,
It's not even Tea Party, just people in general.
It's the same relative concept, you know. It's a fun. There's lots of stuff going on, you know, flying around and it's a long car chase with things blowing up.
Here's a fundamental difference between the example of people cheering for the death penalty and what you're talking about.
No, because right down to it, I am cheering for the end of mankind by enjoying this movie.
But this movie doesn't have real people in it.
That's
fake.
Very good point.
They're fictional.
Although, like, occasionally, I have to admit, I do root for 2012 happening.
Well, okay. All right, well, so my second like is actually Woody Harrelson and his pickles.
Just Woody Harrelson and his pickles.
Well, I mean, just Woody Harrelson in general. Like, he's so ridiculous in this. He plays this.
My like.
Oh, well, then I got one of your likes. I'm sorry.
You took one of my likes. I'm going to have to think of another one.
Agree. You totally agree? Okay. Well, it's hilarious because he just, like, he eats pickles a lot. He has a fridge full of pickles. I'm not sure why.
Well, maybe apparently they are full of electrolytes, so.
Okay. Well, that's great for him. And he's just crazy, but at the same time, he turns out to be right about everything.
Right. He's an absolutely hilarious character who, without any scientific background, complete conspiracy theory guy, he's figured out that this, you know, is actually going to happen because he's been reading, you know, like, the materials and everything. And, like, his radio show it's the concept. He's probably the most realistic character entire movie. I think that's why he's one of my favorites, is that I totally could see him existing. Like him does exist.
Absolutely does. They did those conspiracy radio shows, didn't they, from the old days?
Exactly. So, yeah, mad props. And Woody Harrelson is hilarious in the role.
Yeah.
It's spot on, over the top, just... wackadoodle crazy Woody Harrelson, and so much fun.
Yeah, I agree. Well, why don't I do another like so that we're even up, and we'll do two dislikes.
Okay, sounds good.
So we can even up. Okay. Actually, I really like the part where Dr. Adrian, the main guy that's on the ship, you know who I'm talking about, right? The one with the books. He's got all the books.
Yes, yes.
Okay, well, he does this really... It's really short, and I wish he'd done it longer, but he does a speech about how great art is, and particularly, you know, about how, like, how... what art they bring with them will set up a new legacy, and that some book by some unknown author, which happens to be one of the main characters, but whatever, you know, is like, what are the chances that that would be the book that survived, and that this book will be so important to our existence, and it's like... I just really liked that part. As corny as it was, I loved it.
Yeah, there were a couple of moments in the film, and that was one of the good ones. It's really just his character. He is the voice of reason and optimism and humanity. His later speech when they're on the ship and they're talking about that we lose our humanity if we let these people die... I mean, regardless of the fact that they've already let millions of people die, but still...
Billions.
Billions.
Let's get it right. Let's not start adding wrong facts for them, please.
But, you know, that's true. Okay, so, but yeah, that speech was better than the second one, because that was, like, a really simple moment, and I think more profound than the one about humanity.
I agree. Yeah, yeah. So anyway, so let's go to dislikes. So your second dislike...
My second dislike, I will just go with the one that is related to my first dislike, the utter crap of the science.
Yeah. There's science in this?
No, I mean, that's really, I guess, what it comes down to. You know, and as we just said, it's fine. I can suspend my disbelief, but it's just so over the top in terms of the explanations that you're like, and they pay a lot of time. They spend a lot of time focusing on the science.
Yeah.
That's absurd. That by the end of it, you're like, thank you for a 2.5 hour film that just educated a vast chunk of the population, because let's admit it, we're Americans, we're kind of dumb, who now all think, because let's admit it, we're Americans, we're dumb, that this shit is real. So at least if they were going to set up a premise, they could have, like, you know, and focused so heavily on it that they could have used some actual scientific facts.
Yeah, like bring in little bits of real science so that it makes the fake stuff sound more authentic. Like, it's just really poor writing.
Right.
They just, exactly. Like, what can we do? Let's just make up whatever the hell. And it's, let's, you know, and I'm okay with that if this were a fantasy story, like where dragons came from space and, like, landed and, like, rawr, and, like, killed everything. Because then at that point, like, I really don't care anymore. You've got flying dragons from space, nothing in this movie.
Right. And he did the same thing in The Day After Tomorrow. It's a bunch of crap science that everybody who has any sort of scientific degree will look at and be like, that's crap science. But
there's some realism in Day After Tomorrow in terms of, like, it bases how everything happens is all baloney. But how its starting point, its origins are realistic. I mean, there are, like, all these climate models and systems, and there is global warming, and all of these things are happening.
Right. It's based in a realistic premise. It's just conclusion is ridiculous. This one doesn't even have a realistic premise.
Right. The premise is already baloney. Okay. So I agree with you. The science. That's not one of my options. But yeah. So So I should go to mine, right?
Yes, go to your next dislike, and then we'll go back to my dislike.
Okay, well, this is semi-sort of related to a science thing. The fact that these idiots built a ship which can't turn on its engines unless the doors are
closed.
Oh
my god! Yes! That's one of my dislikes, too! Horrible, horrible engineering!
And what I don't get is this, because all of these ships are built by Chinese people. So is this movie making an argument, like, an indictment against Chinese labor? Like, is it because the Chinese are the one that built this that it's, like, against the U.S. economy and it's, like, outsourcing? Is that what this is secretly telling me? Is, like, no, don't buy Chinese?
It's not even... It's the engineering. So unless the Chinese also engineered it, which I suppose is possible, it's just so illogical to have a ship that the engines can't freaking turn on unless a door is shut.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Why would you build a ship like that?
That you just want to murder someone by the time that the 30-minute scene, based on the premise that someone was a really dumb engineer.
Not to mention, why would they build a ship that, because this is just tied to this, it's a ship that is going to be in a lot of water. They know it's going to get hit with a lot of water. It's going to probably run into stuff. In which there may be leaks. Why is this ship not have, like, an enormous pump system for all of the gear areas? Because people have to get in there if something breaks. So why would you have those areas be, like, have no pumps for the water? I don't understand that. Because the gears get flooded because the doors can't close because they get something stuck in it. It's all dumb. It's all poorly designed, and it's like, we got exactly what we deserved.
Basically.
Building that crap. Except we didn't, because they all live, and it's just...
But, I mean, then it related issue with the bad engineering is that it's really just a systemic issue of really stupid decisions over the course of this film.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it comes down to, is that Roland Emmerich based this film on a series of dumbass decisions.
You mean even the first decision he made to make the film?
Yes, there is that.
Okay, so I just got one of your dislikes, so I just need to do one more, and then we're caught up.
No, didn't you just do? Yeah, okay, one more dislike
and then,
from you,
because yeah.
I only have 2 dislikes left, and you should have 3 dislikes left.
Okay, good. This is perfect. How about the fact that Danny Glover is, like, the worst president ever?
He is kind of a bad president, and like, you just kind of feel bad for the guy.
I just didn't get, like, you see him, he's completely unheroic. Like, he's not like all the other black presidents we've had in films, such as, I don't know, like Morgan Freeman in Deep Impact, who actually gives cool speeches.
Yeah.
Or Tom Lister Jr. from The Fifth Impact, which is a silly film, but he's kind of like, you know, you wouldn't mess with him. But we're led to believe that somehow people don't mess with Danny Glover as president. And I'm like, no, like, he looks almost senile. So I would mess with him. And it's just, it's all of this, and he gives this really lame speech, and then he says to this little girl at one point, I'll find your daddy. And then he goes, I don't know why I did that, like, this weird southern, but, and then he goes to look for the, and he goes outside, and he's like, I'll find him, and I'm like, but he doesn't even do that much.
He and you gotta nothing. Wonder why he even bothers.
No, and it's just, and there's so much attention paid to how, like, heroic and great he's supposed to be, but really all the film is about for his character is, let's have three different times when we will lead the people that are watching to think he's died. Because they do it the first time with the first cloud that hits, and like all of Washington, D.C. is all covered. And we think he's going to die, but he didn't die. He survived that. And then right. There's another bit, like another cloud, and like stuff explodes. And we think that's going to be it. And it's like, oh, no, that didn't do it either. And then it's finally, he gets killed by the USS John F. Kennedy when it lands on top of him. It's just like...
Oh right, and that why the JFK? It's just
I don't know that the ideology in this film is confusing. I don't really know what Emmerich's politics are.
I don't either. But no, I mean, you have a very good point. He is not a very basically the point of this president is so that the douchey Oliver Platt, who I love, not in this film, but I love him, can take over. I mean, that's really the whole point of this president. He's a weak, inconsequential president. And the only... I will punch you. And the only, like, point in time where you're like... you feel really bad for the guy is when he's like, I'm going to be the last American president. And you're like, yeah. And nobody's going to remember you.
Yeah, that's true.
Except as the asshole who didn't let anybody know the world was ending.
No, that's true. That's true.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, yeah. It was a, and I just feel bad for what's his name? Danny Glover. Cause that gave him such a crap part. And I like Danny Glover.
Oh, he hasn't had any good roles in a while.
A long time, I know. And I want him to. It makes me sad.
Okay. Well, let's go now to our fourth like.
Okay. My fourth like is that this is kind of a Africa gets to rule the world.
Oh, no, you noticed that. That was one of the things at the end of the movie was that
Africa has survived.
It almost survived and people return.
Right. It almost completely intact. The thing that killed off most of humanity was the waves, the giant tsunamis. Although, you know, California falling off into the earth, into the ocean, that didn't really help things, but that's just California. Who cares? Massive earthquakes around the world. But everything, you know, basically gets just massive deluge of water. Everybody dies. Except for Africa, which is raised. Which I love.
Well, presumably,
like
a whole
the metaphoric raising of Africa.
Yeah.
And
it is kind of. I noticed that too, because like the final scene of the film is it pans out from the Earth, showing just Africa,
and
it's like mankind returning to its origins.
Mankind, right? Exactly. Mankind returning to its roots, and basically, what I got this film is that white people suck.
Yes.
They're all going to die off within about three generations, I figure. Chinese also suck. And this is basically, I think this is a revenge film. This is like an African revenge movie.
But is Emmerich African?
No, he's German. But maybe he's got, like, you know, yay.
Rage.
And what cracks me up is that the captain has his final comment about, that's why they call it the Cape of Good Hope. You're like, wow. You really don't know anything about South Africa, do you?
No.
Because you guys are effed. Totally effed. They treat their refugees like crap. You're doomed. Love it.
Okay, I agree. Related to this is one of my likes, actually, which is the hilariously obvious symbolism in the Vatican where the Sistine Chapel splits in half, but the split is right between the, you know, the picture with the two fingers like touching God and man. It splits right between, and this is introduced to us, foreshadowed, not even like a minute earlier, in which they say that the Italian prime minister has decided not to come because he's going to rely on prayer.
He's going to rely on prayer, which is a great line.
I know.
Yes.
And it's just so like obviously anti-religion this film is. Because everyone who prays, it doesn't matter who it is, if somebody prays, bad crap happens to them.
They're probably dead, yeah. Oh, you prayed? Sucka!
I mean, the Indian fellows from the very first of the movie, you know, they sit down and there are all these people around them praying as a tsunami's about to wipe them out. And it's like, why didn't you do this like 3 days earlier? Like you waited.
Yeah, I know.
The last
warning
minute.
Symbol would have been nice a couple days ago.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go to our fourth dislike.
Okay, my fourth dislike is the fact that Jordan has such a lame and pointless death. Jordan is the boyfriend of
mother. Oh, yeah, like stepfather.
In the family. Yeah, stepfather type
this
figure.
This is one of my dislikes. Oh, yes.
You know, it's the Russian has a more noble death. The Russian, who is portrayed as a douchebag, which we'll get to in a minute, but he has a more noble death. He saves his children at the last minute.
And then falls to his death.
And then falls to his death. Very noble. Most of the deaths, other than the, you know, the billions of masses, most of the individual deaths are fairly noble. They show someone saving someone else before they die. Jordan, this father figure to the kids, who the kids really like, he's been a great, you know, like the actual dad portrayed by John Cusack has been kind of a deadbeat dad for years.
Yeah, he shows up late.
He shows up late.
He doesn't shower.
Right. He's just not. He's not a very good dad. Not that he doesn't care about his children, but he's still he's off in his own world and he doesn't care for the most part. Anyway. But this guy, who, aside from being a plastic surgeon, one of the douchiest, you know, sorts of medical professions there is, aside from that, he's a very good guy. He loves the mother. He loves the kids. He treated them well.
Yeah, there's even a point when he says, he's talking to the actual father, Jackson, and he says, you know, I've always wanted my own family. You have
right.
no idea how lucky you are. Never forget
right.
that.
Right. And you know. Then they kill him by just like, oh, by the way, he's dead.
They ground him into hamburger.
Into the gears. Yeah.
Into the gears. And then it's like they completely forgot.
Completely forget. Nobody mourns. There's like a moment of, where's Jordan? Oh, he didn't make it. And that's it.
I know. That's my thing, too, is the complete and utter emasculation of the stepfather in order to reestablish the nuclear family.
Exactly.
The whole time, like the first time we see him, he seems like a really nice guy, a mm-hmm. sweet guy, you know, maybe a little dweeby, but in like a cool kind of like nice guy way.
Right.
But then after that, it all falls south. I mean, like he's won't fly the plane because I only had a couple lessons. I'm not a pilot. And it's like, look, the world's going to shit. Like, what does it matter?
Right.
Right. And, you know, just they treat him like dirt. You know, he's made to be sort of like scaredy cat, and you know he's not really the father figure we've led to believe he is, you know.
Right. And it comes down to that you know return to the nuclear family.
Yeah,
that's really all it is.
No, I agree. That was just lame.
it was terribly lame, and that was a slightly lengthy discussion of that point. But
okay, well let's go to our last likes, and then we'll get to our
last dislikes. Okay.
Yeah.
My last like is that it's still better than 10,000 BC.
I'm not going to see that. I'm deleting this from the podcast.
You can't delete it. It should probably be on our torture cinema list.
No.
It is 100 times worse than this film will ever be.
No. Why?
Yep.
Jen, you're going to put it on
our list. I went there. 10,000 BC people. Go watch it. It's torture.
Oh, I hate you.
Let us watch it.
Can we move on
2012
now?
Honestly should never have been on this list because I enjoy this film as sick as that is.
There's something wrong with you. Yeah,
something seriously wrong with me. I do enjoy this film. It's not torture to watch it.
Okay, well
occasionally torturous, but
I'm gonna get to my last like, and
okay, go ahead.
You never said any of that.
All right,
My last like is the fact that this movie was so bad at representing humanity that in the end I actually didn't care that anybody lived, and I actually started to hope that they would all die and that the apocalypse would be like complete, that it, like Earth would just be reset.
The waves come up and wash everyone away, and the end.
Because it's the way I view it is like this is what politics makes me think half the time. That I kind of wish apocalypse would happen, and this is like kind of like what you were saying, and that this is me getting kind of what I want, almost. Except that all of the douchey jackass rich people survive.
Well, I was glad that although that they didn't kill Oliver Platt's character, that they never mentioned him again. He becomes completely obsolete.
But they do that with everything. As soon as they get, they do something to the character, it's just like, well, let's not mention him anymore.
All right, I'm done with you. Moving on!
It's like, yeah, that's not how real life works.
No, it really doesn't. He would have still been sitting there being a pain in the ass and...
Yeah, making arguments that actually make a lot of logical sense.
But make him a douchebag.
They do, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, yeah, no, he's right.
He's got a point.
He's got a really good point. Like, the president wants to hang back and play, you know, like captain of the ship. Go for it.
Have fun with that. We're moving on. Right, exactly. I mean, he makes his own point for becoming an obsolete character.
I agree with him most of the time.
I know.
Not all the time. Most of the time. Okay, anyway, so last dislike.
Last dislike. My last dislike is probably the national stereotypes that occur throughout the film.
Oh, you mean like when the Chinese people are shown like cutting chicken heads off and...
Right. I mean,
Indians
it's just...
are only making fish curry.
And, you know, it's like... And the difference between like the stoic, you know, Indian guy who's also the most brilliant one of them all. And then the Chinese are... Well, actually, they're Tibetan, so therefore they are at peace and good. And then the Chinese themselves are... You know, we don't give a shit about you. They don't even take them back to the camp. I mean, they could have at least done that for the people, right? And then you have the Russians. I felt really bad for Russians after watching this film. Yeah. I don't know if maybe Roland Emmerich grew up in East Germany or something. Or was it West? Whichever side the Russians controlled.
It would have been the East.
Right. Okay. So I don't know if he grew up under their regime or something. So he's got like a really bad opinion of Russians.
Yeah,
but...
because the children are douches and yes. annoying. The father is loud, obnoxious. He's got an ugly mouth, which is like constantly open and like dribbling fat out of it.
He looks like an ugly catfish or something.
He does. The girlfriend, we learn, is cheating on the man who's supposed to be her boyfriend, which is the father, who's ugly and disgusting, which I don't blame her for cheating because he's an ass, but she's cheating on him with the cute pilot.
The cute Sasha.
Sasha.
Who Sasha. Have the most generic Russian names. I mean, I know. Yuri and Sasha, and I don't remember her name, but, you know, it's like... Really? You couldn't come up with slightly better characters
Khrushchev.
At all? And again, you know, he ends up dying a noble death, but he's such a douchebag on the way to that point in time.
Yeah.
You're like, wow, they really don't like Russians. But, I mean, they do it, you know, and it's interesting because they show India, they show China, they show Europeans. They never show Africans.
I know. But that's because in Emmerich's vision of the world, Africa doesn't have anything.
Right. So when it raises up and they go to establish a new kingdom...
it's just going to be colonialism all over again.
Right. They're like, there's only like 300,000 of us, but whatever. We can totally take over the world.
But they have guns and...
Yeah, and Africans have no guns whatsoever.
Well, in Emmerich's version of the world, Africans are they're technologically backwards. I mean, remember, the Caribbean's not part of this either.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
And South America, not a part of it.
Not a part
All of the traditionally, quote-unquote, third-world parts of the world with the... Yeah, no, pretty much all of the third-world parts of the world, with the exception of parts of Middle East, are represented. But all of the what if they're traditionally third-world parts are gone. They're not in this.
Yeah,
They're completely absent. I mean, there are, like, individuals who are from it, but we don't actually see anything. The only thing we see is, like, America going to pot but surviving, China being treated like crap but, like, surviving.
Surviving.
And then most of Europe basically survives, although we don't see – I mean, in terms of, like, in the ships, I mean, that they're all represented. But you
and
don't get
even
any –
one Arab guy. You know, it's like
yeah, but remember that when I that's why I mentioned the Middle East, because the people that are getting saved in the Middle East, they're all of like the rich oil barons.
Yes,
you know, they're the very particular. Like, I think he's supposed to be Saudi Arabian,
probably,
which is technically I would consider if third world still exists as a category, Saudi Arabia would be a third world country. But anyway, but this is all related to my actual dislike, which is that there are no redeeming characters in this entire movie.
Yeah, they're really.
Name one.
The,
so I can see you challenging it. Go for it. Name one.
The doctor.
Dr. Adrian?
Yeah.
No, he's not. He becomes redeeming at the very end, but he spends the entire movie going along, even though morally he feels that this is all morally wrong, hiding this and not protecting people, but he hides it from everybody the whole time, and he just goes and totes the party line. He is no different, in my opinion, than saying... Than somebody from the Nazi party who may not have believed in what the Nazis were doing, but was just went along with it.
Because it's dad.
He tells his dad. Okay, but that's.
Oh, no, his dad doesn't tell anybody either.
But no. See, but the problem with his dad is he sacrifices his principles because of the apocalypse. Remember, we learned that his dad was an alcoholic and that he's been off the wagon, like on the wagon or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And then he gives in because it's apocalypse. I can sacrifice my values.
Point. All right, one redeeming character.
Yeah, name one. The children don't count because they're not really characters.
Yeah, no.
Not to mention, they
Woody Harrelson. Booyah! He exposes the lies to the entire world. He helps them out.
But he does it to buy pickles.
Fortunately, he eats a lot of pickles, so he probably smells bad.
I'm not sure.
So yes, I'm going with Woody Harrelson. He doesn't
so much as because he doesn't.
Except that he's still a conspiracy theorist. That puts him.
It's
crazy.
It's hard. Really. I think if you're going to say someone is close to redeeming, you might say him. But it's hard.
The daughter of the president.
The daughter of the president.
Yes.
No, because she goes along with a lot of it too.
But she doesn't find out until the very, very end.
Yeah, but remember when they're told when they're getting on the ship. And Adrian and her standing there, and they're told by him, she pats him on the shoulder, and then just continues walking.
That's right. Crap.
And that's the problem. It's like the only characters we can say are redeeming are characters we don't really know anything about.
Yeah.
Which is, like Woody Harrelson, we really don't know anything about him. We just have the caricature.
Might be a complete douchebag who, you know, abused his spouse. And
maybe he turned his family into pickles. Alrighty. Let's leave it on a funny note.
Okay.
So, so if you guys want to suggest another movie, we are still looking for Halloween suggestions, which means anything that is, like, horror-based, but, you know, it could be a science fiction horror movie or anything like that, as long as it's somehow fantastic in nature, not like a slasher film.
Yeah, no, and it has to be ridiculous.
It has to be bad. That's the point.
I want ridiculous. I don't want just bad. I want ridiculous.
Okay, maybe we'll watch Killer Clowns. Whatever. Point is, we need those recommendations. So if you've got some, we've got a couple more weeks before we have to finally put up a poll about it. So got suggestions, send them our way. Otherwise, you can suggest anything. If you know there's a bad sci-fi fantasy horror movie that you just thought was bad and you want us to watch it, or you've heard it's bad and you want us to watch it, suggest it. Leave a comment. It's easy to let us know about these things. You can contact us in like 12 different ways. You can send us a comment on our blog.
SkiffyandFanty.wordpress.com.
Tweet.
Twitter.com/SkiffyandFanty.
Google+.
Shawnee Jen.
And email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
Yep. And of course, we do have a Facebook page. Just look for Skiffy and Fanny. You'll find
Skiffy
it.
Skiffy and Fanty Show, yeah. What is our grade for this movie?
This is right. We didn't give a grade for this
didn't
movie.
Didn't give a grade. So let's give a grade real quick.
D+.
D+? Really? That bad?
Here's the problem. While I enjoy watching it, I recognize that I shouldn't and that there's something seriously wrong with me. So I'm giving it a D+ because at least it was pretty compared to other films we've watched would have just been bad with bad graphics.
That's a good point. I'm going to give it a C, just a C, because...
Oh, God, I thought you were going to put a plus on that. I was going to hit
No, not in a million years. But I can't give it anything worse than that, because the acting is fine.
Yeah, it's
even if the script is terrible, the acting is fine. It really is a fun film. And it's the, you know, watching the world get destroyed. I'm with you. I enjoy it, as sick as that makes me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm going with a C.
Alrighty. So that puts our average at C minus.
Yay.
Yay for even out. Yay.
All right. Exactly.
Okay, well, we will see you all next week. We have Jason Sanford on for a roundtable discussion, so it'll be good. It'll be awesome.
It will be. We always love having Jason on.
Yeah, because he's schmexy.
Schmexy?
Yeah, it's less gay than sexy.
I thought it was like a sexy Mexican.
And on that note, we'll see you all next week.
Bye-bye!
Bye.
Caution. You have entered the Podstruction Zone. Please secure all podcatchers. Caution.
How's it coming, guys?
This won't go any faster if you keep interrupting.
Got it. Here's some steampunk, diesel punk, gothic punk.
Goth punk?
Gothic. Trust me on this.
Hey, you're the one who invited him to the show, Sean. I've got epic fantasy, sword and sorcery, and all the news on ebooks.
That's it. Check it out. Clock punk. Ooh, shiny.
I have space opera, time travel, Stargate, and...
Sean, is that He-Man?
Shut up. Boys, I think we did it.
A superior podcast.
Publishing, writing, genre, best-selling authors, and the hot new writers of today.
Editors and agents, contests? Did we leave anything out?
AdventuresInSciFiPublishing.com.
Subscribe today to Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing, your podcast for science fiction and fantasy literature since 2006.
Sean?
It's just so beautiful.
Podstruction complete. Enjoy.
Our new intro music is Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
Afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.